In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, September 1st, 2010, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the first day of September. And thank you for listening to what will be, I expect, a terrific program today, focusing on cybersecurity for both hours of the program. And my guest is Melissa Hathaway. She led President Obama's cyberspace policy review as a cybersecurity coordinator for the president, leaving office August 21st of 2009, and also responsible for development of the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative, the CNCI, which we've talked about at great length both on this program and on all of Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. Ms. Hathaway, it's great to have you on the show. We've been working at this for a while, and so it's terrific for you to be able to be here in studio with me.
Thanks, Francis. I'm really excited to be here today.
You are the author also of a report that came out, I believe, in May of this year that discussed cybersecurity legislation that was pending on Capitol Hill at the time. We were talking before we went on the air that there are a number of pieces that have come out since that analysis. But I'd like to talk a little bit about your May report and get a kind of give us a benchmark to work from as we talk about what's happened since then. At that time, you stated that there were over 35 pieces of legislation that had been introduced in this Congress that address cybersecurity at one level or another. Of those, how many of those dealt pretty hardcore with what the agencies were focused on, and how many of them were focused just on cybersecurity in the United States in general?
There was probably about a dozen or more that were focused on the federal agencies and their different responsibilities, and probably another 15 to 20 that were broader, focused on data breach and personal identifiable information and broader regulation of the overall network infrastructure.
At the time, you pointed out nine of those bills as particular pieces of legislation to pay attention to. Data Breach Notification Act, a Senate bill, Data Accountability and Trust Act, and we'll post the entire list. And, in fact, we'll have a link to your entire report at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Of those nine pieces, what is the latest on those and how they might affect the ways that the agencies are doing business?
Since the report in May, there's actually been two additional data breach legislation bills introduced, both in the Senate, again trying to streamline the 46 state laws and focus on reporting so that our agencies have a better understanding of what's happening in our infrastructure. And so that would be the data breach legislation, the first two in my overall report. The others are actually beginning to be addressed and to some degree in the National Defense Authorization Act, as well as the proposed legislation that's intended to come from Senator Reid that would combine a few more pieces of the legislation that would address perhaps a cyber ambassador at the Department of State, certainly enhanced education and training requirements across the federal agencies, and FISMA reform, Federal Information Security Management Act, which is one of the bills I said to watch. It's been combined into the Senator Lieberman and Collins bill that was introduced in June, which is Senate 3480. Mm-hmm. And it's also been the House version of FISMA was introduces an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act at the House side of the National Defense Authorization Act.
What the FISMA reform legislation, this is, people have been talking about this on both the legislative side and the executive branch side for years now, and since the original FISMA pretty much. What do you think we're likely to see when it comes to changing FISMA or rebuilding it, or however people want to parse it?
I think the principal thing that we'll see change with the FISMA reform is moving from a compliance checklist type of environment to more of a continuous performance monitoring that includes red teaming, perhaps auditing of the networks, as well as your basic hygiene on the networks, which would have been, I think, more the compliance regime.
Mm-hmm. I hear that sigh that you hear, or that ah, is people relaxing all over Washington, CIO saying, thank heavens that we're going to move away from the box checking, because that's every CIO I talk to on or off the record says I spend more time checking than I do actually making sure that nobody's doing anything bad on my network.
Right. And the FISMA reform is largely based off of what I would consider the gold standard, which has been implemented over at the Department of State, which is a continuous monitoring and performance. And they do a continual check and report card, if you will, on how secure is the network, how up to date are they on their patches and such. And so as we look at the different language in either the House or the Senate version, they're both generally modeled after what John Stroyford over at the Department of State has implemented.
Are those things like are happening at State, are those programs replicable across agencies, do you think? Obviously, there will be modifications based on the missions of the agencies, but is this a case where best practices can pretty easily be transposed from network to network, agency to agency?
It depends on who you talk to. I believe that it is that those effective practices that were implemented at Department of State are replicable across all of the departments and agencies. And in fact, the scorecard that they use helps inform the senior decision makers of what's, you know, where are there, is there need to be further focus by other managers to ensure the overall network hygiene and or effective security practices are being implemented.
Mm-hmm. This one of the hallmarks, I think, of this administration, and people are picking up on it as a best practice, is they're not afraid to take what works at one agency and try to replicate it. So it wouldn't surprise you. We've seen that with what Roger Baker is doing on project management at VA. It would seem to me to make perfect sense for somebody to say, why don't we just do the same thing that's happening at State?
Right.
As we move on through these pieces of legislation, we'll talk about some more of them in particular, but what should we be thinking about? What should we be, is there something between the lines of these or maybe a common thread that we should be aware of that maybe we're not thinking about?
I think that, well, some of the common thread, if you were to look at the legislative landscape 2 years ago, there was very little legislation introduced in the cybersecurity area, and I think as of today we have 52 pieces of legislation. So certainly enhanced education and awareness has surfaced over the last several years. And so I think that that would be one theme, that it's raise awareness and try to gather an understanding of what is the situation on all of our networks, not just our federal networks.
Mm-hmm. On Capitol Hill, awareness of an issue can manifest itself either one of two ways. I can introduce a bill because I'm really concerned that there's a problem and I want to try to solve it. Or I can introduce a bill because I want to tack my name onto something that is in the headlines. Are you getting a sense, and I'm not going to ask you to comment on a particular piece on the merits, but are you getting a sense that members of Congress are becoming more engaged on this issue because they're aware of the dangers that are out there, or because they're hearing the word cybersecurity and want to associate themselves with it?
I think that the members of Congress really understand now and are beginning to develop a much more greater appreciation of what's happening to our economic and national security. And so as each bill is introduced, it's focusing on a particular element that's that falls into their jurisdiction that they can actually address, or an area that they're very passionate about.
My guest is Melissa Hathaway of Hathaway Global Strategies, talking about cybersecurity legislation pending on Capitol Hill and how it will affect your agency. We'll continue our conversation on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment. Here's Hillary Ward, Director, Global Head of Managed Identity Services at Citi Global Transaction Services, commenting during the panel discussion on trust in the Internet. Is trust the next killer app? Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
We manage risk. It's underwriting. I mean, this is the basics of what we do. And so we're managing risk. And if we manage risk, we also manage it through the enterprise and in our applications. And it's just a matter of how much the risk is in that application as to who you're going to let see it and how you're going to let them get there.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to Federal
federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Securing identities in transactions is an essential component to building trusted online systems and a critical priority for both business and government. Trusted online environments can reduce costs, expand services, and are critical to protecting how and with whom information is shared. Booz Allen Hamilton has developed an integrated approach to cybersecurity, identity, systems development, and trusted services. Booz Allen is ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
If you can't communicate effectively, you can't get the job done. That's why government agencies turn to Avaya Government Solutions and Shared Technologies. Unified communication solutions from Avaya and Shared Technologies increase employee productivity, improve customer service, and cut costs by integrating multiple forms of communications across multi-vendor networks. Faster, more efficient, at a lower cost. The future of unified communications has arrived. Learn more at avayagov.com/GSA2010.
There's something for everyone in Natchitoches. Every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, it's Miller Lite Party Night at Nationals Park. Get a scoreboard pavilion seat and drink voucher for only $20. $22 for prime games. And make sure to come early for the games, live music, and $5 drinks when the center field gates open all the way to the first pitch. A shot of baseball always cures a work-induced headache. Join the party at the park. Call 888-632-NATS or visit nationals.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Listen next week for the Business of Government Hours Conversation with Author series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What is cloud computing? How can states use process improvement methods to transform service delivery? And how is geographic information systems used to enhance citizen engagement? Next week's show will profile three IBM Center reports and explore these issues with Dr. David Wild, Dr. Vicki Grant, and Professor Sukumar Ganapati. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorovec. Here's what we're working on for the Dorovec Insider this afternoon. They look like kind of funky barcodes. They're called QR codes, and they're actually super barcodes. Not that popular in the U.S. just yet. We'll tell you what QR codes are and how government can use them. And a big day for aviation, the first flight using the next generation air transportation system. We'll explain what next gen is this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorovec Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm happy to welcome Melissa Hathaway to the studio today to talk about cybersecurity and in particular cybersecurity legislation that's pending on Capitol Hill and how it will affect your agency. When you initially prepared your legislation analysis and report back in May, you had nine pieces of legislation to watch. Those nine, obviously, as time winds down in this Congress, election coming in November, the political realities are that nine pieces of legislation are probably going to get winnowed. How do you expect those to get winnowed over the next couple of months?
I believe that there's only going to be a few pieces of legislation that Congress will be able to focus on when they come back from recess, which is mid-September, and prior to the election or prior to adjournment. And as we look at the last quarter of this calendar year, the National Defense Authorization Act will be one of the key pieces of legislation to follow. And within that contains part of the FSMA reform, which was one of the pieces of legislation I said to watch back in May.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that potentially the Intelligence Authorization Act of 2010 will be another element of legislation to watch to give the intelligence committees the power that they need to oversee the intelligence community's programs.
The people sometimes get a little bit queasy when they think about the interaction between cybersecurity, especially in the private sector, and the intelligence community in government. What implications do you think it has that the intelligence community is becoming so, I guess integrated is the best word I can think of, into cyber defenses in the United States? General Miros was here when CNCI report first came out and said that essentially it's a good idea because that's where the brains are. Do you agree with that assessment?
I think that the cybersecurity mission requires all of government participation in all the mission areas. The intelligence community brings an important aspect of understanding the foreign threat and capabilities, and the law enforcement community brings a very a strong understanding of the counterintelligence threat and the organized crime or organized criminal activity. And to the extent that we can leverage all of the expertise across all of the different mission areas to bring an all-of-government approach and solution, then that's what we should do.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned FSMA reform being rolled into the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA. And you said earlier that FSMA reform will move from a compliance to a kind of a continuous monitoring element. What will that mean specifically for how I, as a CIO or a CISO at an agency, do business? How will my life be different, do you think, if that comes to pass?
I think that if you're a CIO, and you'll have to start to look at more performance-based monitoring of your network. You'll have to implement possibly the risk scoring tool that measures on a continuous basis the known vulnerabilities of your network. I think that potentially it will afford the CIO or CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, more of a voice within their respective front offices of their agencies. And in the House version of the FSMA reform, it addresses some of the minimum standards that have to be implemented on networks. Taking NIST standards, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, the NIST standards for government systems to a more structured or higher level of security.
Mm-hmm.
And they may, if a CIO may also now have to start to look at supply chain risk mitigation strategies that was introduced in the House version of the FSMA reform.
All of those elements seem to lead to the CIO and the CISO being more deeply woven into the fabric of the C-level at every single agency.
That's right. I believe that they'll be more, they'll have more access to the front office, if not a stronger say in the programs. I think that they'll have to be more integrated into IT acquisition and or broader acquisition programs because of the supply chain risk strategies, mm-hmm. and the continuous performance monitoring. And so I believe that the CIO and CISO will be become one of the foundational offices of all of the different departments and agencies.
We're just about out of time for this segment, but just briefly, do you think that the CIOs and the CISOs are equipped to do that? Are they ready to step up and take that additional responsibility?
I think that they will need to have a broader insight into what's happening in their respective agency, and they may have to have some acquisition training and other things in order to be best equipped for their new responsibilities.
We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. My guest on In Depth with Francis Rose today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For both hours of the program, Melissa Hathaway on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are in rally mode on this first day of September. Investors are cheering positive manufacturing data. The Institute for Supply Management reporting its index is showing a 13th straight month of expansion. The Dow's up 238 points, the Nasdaq higher by 57. But not everybody is feeling bullish today. H.J. Heinz chief executive William Johnson says the global economy is in the worst state he's ever seen during his 35 years in the industry. He also indicated his company's earnings could fall below analysts' expectations. Auto sales for August weren't as revved up as in July. General Motors says sales dropped 7% from the month previous, and they were down 25% from a year earlier when sales were boosted by the government's Cash for Clunkers program. Meantime, Ford saw sales slip 5% from July. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Sam's Club Plus member Debbie Boone.
Sam's Club helps me save. E-values help me save even more.
September 1st through 6th only, your Sam's Club membership is loaded with $300 in e-values for extra savings throughout the club.
$100 off an HP notebook, $2 off Tide. Great stuff.
Not a member? Join today and get $300 in e-values, a benefit Sam's Club Plus members enjoy all year. Sam's Club. Savings made simple. Supplies are limited and may not be available in all clubs. One item per membership, no rain checks.
Like a lot of people, Marlo Scott wanted to do things differently. So she created her own business and made ink from Jace her business card.
I was doing the corporate grind until I opened my cupcake wine and beer bar, Sweet Revenge. I love ink. I get rewards on every purchase. It has twice the acceptance worldwide as American Express. And free ink cards if I need them for my employees.
Make your mark with ink. Go to jace.com/ink. Jace what matters.
Acceptance rates based on global, not domestic data. Restrictions apply. Ink cards issued by Chase Bank USA and subject to credit approval. Copyright 2010. JPMorgan Chase & Company. All rights reserved.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
A U.S. official said yesterday they notified Dutch authorities early on they had no derogatory information on two men, both of Yemeni origin, who had suspicious items in their luggage. Still, the Dutch were not satisfied. A major concern was the fact that one of the men and his luggage, which contained suspicious items, were headed to separate locations. A U.S. intelligence official said the last chapter on this has not been written yet. I'm J.J. Green.
If you've ever stumbled in the dark, did you ever stop to think how difficult it is for our military to see what they need to see and nothing else during night warfare? Airink has. Airink provides design solutions for night vision devices, helmet-mounted displays, and laser eye protection, just to name a few. They help all branches of our armed forces to see better, fly and land faster, and most importantly, more safely. Airink helps today's military forces become ready for tonight's warfare challenges. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Tuesday, August 24th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. Our program this month will discuss critical issues on optimizing government's infrastructure. The panel includes government leaders from DISA, FAA, and the Department of Energy. Don't miss The Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, August 24th at 12 noon right here on Federal News Radio 1500 and online on federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by HP, CA Technologies, and Data Guys. No tickets to the game? Well, tune in to Channel 50 WDCW and watch all the action as Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens take on the St. Louis Rams at Edward Jones Dome this Thursday, September 2nd, in their last preseason game. Kickoff is at 8 p.m., so make sure your TV is tuned to WDCW Channel 50 to catch every play. For more information about this game and the upcoming season, please visit BaltimoreRavens.com. That's BaltimoreRavens.com.
A little chocolate. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. A little dark chocolate may reduce the risk of heart failure, but before everyone builds an appetite, let's emphasize the little. At Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, researcher Murray Mittelman examined data on middle-aged and older women in Sweden who ate dark chocolate.
A typical serving in this study would be approximately a half to two-thirds of a standard chocolate bar in the U.S.
Those who ate one or two servings a week had about a one-third lower risk of developing heart failure. But those who ate one serving or more a day didn't get the benefit, and Mittelman thinks it's because the extra chocolate created extra calories. The study in the American Heart Association journal Circulation, Heart Failure, was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Melissa Hathaway, joining me to talk about cybersecurity legislation. Her report in May on pending cybersecurity legislation on Capitol Hill has been regarded as pretty much the definitive statement on what is going on the Hill and how it might affect your agency. And we're getting an update from Melissa today, among other subjects. We were talking before the break, Melissa, about the implications of some of this legislation, in particular FISMA reform and the tools that CIOs and CISOs will need to have. We talked about some of those tools. Are the resources, do you think, available, or will they be made available because of this kind of renaissance on Capitol Hill as far as awareness of cybersecurity issues? Is the money going to follow the mandate, do you think?
Well, there's already the IT budget for the departments and agencies is already a significant amount of money. I think it's somewhere around $84 billion per year this year for FY10. I did not see additional funds put in the authorization for FY11 to be commensurate with the duties that the CIOs or CISOs may get from FISMA. However, if you look at the State Department model, was actually able to cut costs as they effectively implemented measures over time, mm-hmm. and through smart purchasing of software, integration of software, and overall network accountability, if you will. And so it's possible that additional resources may not be required in order to implement the FISMA reform that's foreseen in the legislation.
The reason I ask is that every budget person that I talk to says the first thing that gets cut is travel and the second thing that gets cut is training. And it sounds like training will be one of the elements that will be required to get CIOs and CISOs to the level that you think they will need to be at to be able to meet some of these new requirements.
Yes, I also think that the CIOs and CISOs have to be more informed on what the threat is, mm-hmm. and how it's changing over time. And I don't believe that they have enough access to that information right now. And I think that that will be really more of a change in the way the concept of operations or the way that operationalization of the threat is actually given to them over time. And which is a change of process and procedure for mm-hmm. the intelligence community or the counterintelligence community to help inform them of what they need to know.
How do you think that restructuring should look as far as the information getting to the places it needs to get to?
I think that the CIOs and CISOs would benefit on at least a monthly threat briefing and perhaps a daily report of this is what you need to be aware of that mm-hmm. we're seeing broadly. And that could just be two things that could be implemented quickly, and I think it would have a strong impact for the CIOs and CISOs.
As we look at threats broadly, and how are they changing? How are threats evolving, say, over the past 18 months to 5 years?
Over the past 18 months to 5 years, the threat has become far more sophisticated. They are far more stealthy. They're in different ways targeting our social networks and our processes and procedures to gain access and or create vulnerabilities to our networks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a stronger appreciation that it's not just an internet-based threat, or that it can come in from an insider through a thumb drive or through an iPod or any other multimedia device that you might connect to your network. It can come in through your Wi-Fi or your wireless ports, which we don't normally think of. But when you put your Bluetooth on, that's now a brand new venue to come into your network.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been a realization of the supply chain that we need to look at the overall purchase of components and the integration of components in our enterprise and look at the provenance of those technologies and or the chain of custody of those mm-hmm. technologies.
Yeah, that was going to be my question about the supply chain is are we paying enough attention to the integrity of the supply chain and making sure that we're getting the real thing? Counterfeiting is becoming a much greater problem than I ever heard of it before. And just are we paying attention to where the stuff is coming from and guaranteeing when it gets put on the network that it's clean?
I think that there's more attention that's required in this area. Some people sometimes don't go to the trusted source or the authoritative source for buying of some of the equipment and or technology, software or hardware, and therefore they don't always get a true source supply. They get a counterfeiter. They get a gray market capability.
Mm-hmm. I apologize that we've gotten off the track of your analysis of this legislation, and we'll get back on track when we come back from the break, but there are so many components to this conversation, and so many of them I find fascinating, and so I apologize for getting off the circuit. We talked about your analysis that there are really only two pieces of legislation to pay attention to in cybersecurity right now. That's the National Defense Authorization Act, and we talked about that a little bit. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about the Intelligence Authorization Act and the implications therein. My guest is Melissa Hathaway on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
There's honor among hackers and a well-organized business plan. Here's Colin Clark, Vice President and Senior Cybersecurity Analyst at Forrester Research.
I haven't seen any organization like this where they've got SLAs that within 12 hours, if this type of malware doesn't work for you, we'll generate a new one for you. That's the kind of support that they're providing to people who buy malware from them.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Newsmakers talk to Max Kakis on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch on the federal pay dispute.
I think, you know, a lot of it is hogwash. And when you look at what some folks in the federal on the federal side, engineers, scientists, especially our higher skilled folks, they are at a deficit.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and my guest today is Melissa Hathaway, former cybersecurity coordinator and author of the 60-day cybersecurity cyberspace policy review. And Melissa, I appreciate you being here for the entire program today. That's a lot of material to cover, and I'm grateful for your time in going through all of this.
Thanks, Francis.
We talked about the fact that there are only two bills that are pending out of the what's your tally right now?
52.
Okay, only two of those that you think are things that we should be spending a lot of time on between now and the end of this Congress. We discussed the National Defense Authorization Act and the implications of that one. The other one that you cited is S-3611, the Intelligence Authorization Act of 2010, passed the Senate on August 5th. What is included here?
It includes a number of areas for increased congressional oversight, some additional compliance regimes, and vulnerability assessments of major systems and major acquisitions that the intelligence community has to implement. And that's at a very high level. At a more specific level, one of the things that it's requesting is for the DNI to work with the Attorney General and other key cabinet officials to help inform Congress of what other legislative initiatives need to be undertaken to strengthen our overall cybersecurity posture of the country.
You mentioned congressional oversight as a component of this bill, and I wonder, anytime anybody brings up oversight of DHS, somebody says there's 9,721 committees that have jurisdiction over DHS. Same thing with DOD. Are we in danger of getting into the same territory when it comes to cybersecurity, where so many committees and subcommittees have a piece of it that it's difficult for the actual pros who are trying to work this stuff to get it done?
Certainly there are a number of committees that have jurisdiction in this particular area and interest. I know that when I was in government, I spent one of the year 2008, I was up briefing Congress and or testifying more than 150 times. And so that's where there's a lot of committees that have interest.
Mm-hmm.
There was a proposal and that has been proposed that perhaps we form a special committee like we did for the year 2000 bug, the Y2K committee, mm-hmm. that Senator Bennett led, that would oversee the implementation or have the oversight mechanisms across government for cybersecurity. That has certainly strengths and weaknesses, but it would allow the government, the executive branch, to focus on execution and implementation of key programs while only having to brief and inform one or two committees of Congress. And the Y2K was a joint committee from both the House and the Senate.
That's an interesting example because I recall that, the response to how that whole situation was handled was universally well received. The John Koskinen led it. By all accounts, did just a tremendously outstanding job. Congressional oversight was so narrowly focused that it was easy for him to concentrate on getting the job done. Are we at a place, do you think, politically where that could happen? And is the person that occupies your old job, whether it's Howard Schmidt or his successor, properly equipped with the resources that they need and with the jurisdiction that they need to be able to do that? Do you use that model?
The cybersecurity coordinator in the White House currently is within the National Security Council and therefore is not required to interface with Congress. He's not a Senate-confirmed position. There are a number of pieces of legislation, more than 10, that would like that position to be an office within the White House, similar to the Office of Management and Budget or the Office of Science and Technology Policy, which is a Senate-confirmed position and has the requirement of keeping the Senate informed or the Congress informed of different elements. I do believe that it would be important to consolidate the oversight mechanisms of cybersecurity into a smaller number of committees, and ideally it would be two,
mm-hmm.
one in the House and one in the Senate, or super ideally it would be just one, mm-hmm. like we did for Y2K. But I don't see there being a consensus around that approach being the right approach right now, given all of the complexities in the cybersecurity environment, the jurisdictional overlap, the requirements from a foreign policy, domestic policy, legal aspect, and economic and commercial aspect.
Mm-hmm. Would having been Senate confirmed made a difference in how you did your job when you were cyber coordinator, do you think?
Would it have made a difference? It would have made a difference in the fact that I would have been required to testify before Congress on the activities that I was conducting within the White House.
Mm-hmm.
As I was sitting in the National Security Council, I did not have a requirement to testify. In fact, you're precluded from testifying, but you're also precluded from broad interface with Congress. I think interface with Congress is important because it needs to be a partnership. Policy sometimes requires law, and it always requires resources, and Congress is the resourcing activity
mm-hmm.
and the legal activity that can implement the changes that we really do need in our landscape right now to improve the cybersecurity posture.
So do you think that position should be eventually made into a Senate-confirmed position?
I think that the idea of a White House office is one that was identified in the cyberspace policy review. It needs to be staffed and given the adequate resources to help with coordinating a government-wide response to the to what's needed for the country. Whether the person is Senate confirmed or not, that is really debatable. So long as they can interface with Congress and keep Congress informed,
mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the more important parts of that element of that office.
You mentioned the resources that would need to go along with that, and it's interesting that you do so because the way that you describe it, and based on my knowledge of Congress watching from an amateur perspective, it does look like the kind of thing that would not be out of the ordinary for Congress to mandate and then not attach any resources to.
I think the key part will be start with personnel. And then what funding or budget will they have? If you look at Office of Science and Technology Policy, our Office of Management and Budget, they have different manning levels and they were created during different times in our history. The current office, could certainly use a couple dozen more people, to help with the oversight and or coordination across government. There's a lot of activities underway that need that cross-government point of view and sort of the quarterback, if you will.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about pieces of legislation that are already exist, that are already written out. Some of them have passed one house or the other. Some of them have not. But we've talked so far on the program about things that are already going. There's one piece that we haven't gotten to that's still pending that Senator Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, has talked about. And we'll dig into that when we come back from the break on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest for the program today, Melissa Hathaway, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Here's Dr. Jeff Vose from the National Institute of Standards and Technology commenting during the panel discussion on trust in the Internet. Is trust the next killer app? Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
I firmly believe that the whole trust issue is the next killer app. It's not a U.S.-centric problem by any stretch of the imagination. It's a global problem. But then you have the interoperability of the global space. You have certain countries that are actually, you know, as we all know, performing certain cyber attacks on other nations.
To hear the show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Securing identities in transactions is an essential component to building trusted online systems and a critical priority for both business and government. Trusted online environments can reduce costs, expand services, and are critical to protecting how and with whom information is shared. Booz Allen Hamilton has developed an integrated approach to cybersecurity, identity, systems development, and trusted services. Booz Allen is ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/Expert Voices.
You're an agent of change, making changes for the better in the face of shrinking budgets and expanding expectations. Amplify your agency's possibilities with unified communication solutions from Verizon that enable you to securely and reliably work where you work best, at a kitchen table or an office abroad. Change your team into a dynamic, interactive 24/7 think tank with our collaboration solutions and BlackBerry Bold smartphones, and transform smaller budgets into bigger successes. So while demands are rising and funds are declining, you can address both with powerful, global mobile voice and data solutions from Verizon. Find out how you can make your teams even more powerful and effective at verizonwireless.com/gov or by calling 1-800-293-3048. Verizon. Rule the air.
No tickets to the game? Well, tune in to Channel 50 WDCW and watch all the action as Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens take on the St. Louis Rams at Edward Jones Dome this Thursday, September 2nd, in their last preseason game. Kickoff is at 8 p.m., so make sure your TV is tuned to WDCW Channel 50 to catch every play. For more information about this game and the upcoming season, please visit BaltimoreRavens.com. That's BaltimoreRavens.com.
Department of Homeland Security CIO Richard Spires will discuss the department's $6.4 billion IT investment and a status update on major contracts within the department at a breakfast event hosted by INPUT, the Authority on Government Business, on October 5th at the Ritz-Carlton in McLean, Virginia. John Sly, Principal Analyst for INPUT, will also identify major technology investments within the department. To register, go to dhsbreakfast.input.com or call INPUT Events at 703-707-3698.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Melissa Hathaway, and we have been talking to Melissa throughout the program today about her analysis of cybersecurity legislation that's currently pending on Capitol Hill. But there is one bill that has not yet dropped, as they say, and that is being proposed by Senator Harry Reid. We're just starting to learn some of the details about it. What are you hearing? What do we know so far about what we can expect from Senator Reid when the Senate comes back in a couple of weeks?
I think that one of the important things that Senator Reid coordinated over the summer was a letter that was signed by, co-signed by a number of the committee chairs, Senator Leahy, Senator Levin, Senator Kerry, Senator Rockefeller, Senator Lieberman, and Senator Feinstein, which shows that there's a broad unanimity across the Senate leadership that we need to have cybersecurity reform. And his staff is underway of working to try to combine into one omnibus bill all of the different pieces of legislation that those senators have introduced. I think it's principally focused on combining Senator Rockefeller and Senator Snowe's piece of legislation, the Cybersecurity Act of 2009, which was Senate 773, with the National Asset Act of 2010, which was introduced by Senator Lieberman and Senator Collins and includes Senator Carper's FISMA reform. And that's Senate Bill 3480. And I think over the course of the last several months, all of the staff have been working to develop this piece of coordinated legislation. It will be primarily focused on the critical infrastructure and how do we secure the critical infrastructure. But then it also has elements that I've seen in a number of the pieces of legislation that include standing up a third-party information-sharing clearinghouse, working on a more of a operational planning activity like an NCTC, the National Counterterrorism Center. Each bill calls it a little bit different. It's called the National Cyber Coordination Center in the Lieberman-Collins bill. It's called a National Cyber Operations Center in the Senator Bond's bill, and it's identified in the Senator Rockefeller and Senator Snowe's bill without a name, just the need for cross-government coordination and operational planning and interface with the private sector. There's a number of other common elements that are in the bills among those committee chairs that may appear in Senator Reid's bill. I believe, though, that the staff are still working on it, and we may not see it emerge until closer to the election timeframe.
But you do expect it to get out before November.
Senator Reid has announced his intent that he would like this to go and be passed by the Senate this congressional year.
But to be fair, that's different than you expecting it to be available by the end of this session, because I mean, I think we're all aware of the potential political ramifications of what's going on.
I think right now there is no House version of a comprehensive bill, and I think it would be very difficult to have the bills introduced in both the House and Senate pass the whole Senate and House and then become law or be up for a view of law before the end of this congressional year.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I think that consensus can be formed over this congressional year, but that this bill will likely have to be introduced in the next Congress.
You mentioned the list of chairs that signed that letter, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit more when we come back from the break. My guest for this hour and into next hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM is Melissa Hathaway. We'll talk more about cybersecurity legislation, how it affects your agency when In Depth continues.